What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the You Know Ball podcast. I'm your host, Trill Bro Dude. Haven't done one of these up top in a while, but I just wanted to say before the episode starts, congratulations to Sixers announcer Mark Zumoff on a fantastic career. He announced yesterday that he will be retiring. Mark is one of the reasons growing up that I like fell in love with the Sixers and basketball, and had a huge influence over so many people. Clearly, I saw so many people talking about it when the news came out yesterday. Obviously, everyone was very sad that Mark was leaving. He's the best at what he does. He was just such an awesome presence throughout all these years, and it really sucks to see him go. But I will say, I only met Mark once. It was a while ago. I was in high school, and I'm older than you think. So it really was a while ago. But he was like the nicest, kindest guy. He came into my job when I worked at Cold Stone Creamery, and he took pictures with me, talked Sixers with me for like 10 minutes. I was like 15 years old, and he was just chilling, talking, and totally great dude. And I wish him the best in retirement, and I hope that this is not permanent. So best of luck in retirement, Mark, and I know you're listening. So I hope you just enjoy things and don't let the Sixers get to you. You're getting a little older now, and I hope that you don't take these things too seriously, because I know I do, and you'll see why. Enjoy the episode. What's going on, guys? We are back. Another episode of the You Know Ball podcast. I am your host, Trill Bro Dude. We're finally recovering 10 days later from a very unfortunate ending to the Sixers season. I wanted to take a week off and just kind of process my thoughts and everything, no pun intended. And today I have a special guest. You might know him from Forbes, Bleacher Report, Fansided, or the NBA podcast. It's Brian Toporek. What's going on, Brian?
Are we recovering from that series yet? You might be in a better place than I am.
I've said on this podcast the whole year that, like, at first when I thought that they could contend, I was like, this is great, but if they are to fall short in the playoffs, let's say they lose in the second round. At the time, it was to the Miami Heat or the Boston Celtics.
Yep.
In my mind, I didn't think it was going to be to the Atlanta Hawks, so that makes it a little bit harder, I think, just because you don't expect that at all. But I still feel as though what happened this year, in the long run, will be better for the Embiid era of the Sixers, which we now we'll just call the Embiid era of the Sixers. Because I feel like I always had the thought in the back of my mind that they wouldn't have enough shot creation. They wouldn't have enough guys that can get their own bucket at the end of playoff games. And that's exactly what happened. And unfortunately, it ended very poorly. But now that I've had 10 days to process it, I still feel it sucks because of everything that has happened since.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that the hardest part?
I mean, you can't, like, you know, I was thinking about this last night, because, like, now we're waiting to hear about Giannis. You know, by all accounts, he's probably going to be out for the rest of the series, if not the playoffs. But you can't necessarily think, like, okay, well, if the Sixers advances out of the Hawks, like, in game four of this series,
of Giannis course.
Also, you know. So I still think the Bucks were a better team than the Sixers. I think they would have beaten the Sixers in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I actually agree with you that in the long run, losing in the second round in this embarrassing meltdown fashion, at least is going to force the principal parts of said loss to do more self-reflection than they would if you lose to the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, you know, Morey in his end of season press conference was saying, like, look, if we're just squeaking by in the second round, we weren't good enough to win a title.
Which, exactly.
You know, I think I was in the camp all year of, you know, they're really good. This has been an awesome regular season, but there were some concerns that you had to address in the playoffs. And unfortunately, a lot of them came up when we really did not want to see them.
Yeah. And kind of going off of your point there, like, I mean, I think that the Bucks might run into this issue now that they've advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals. Obviously, Giannis getting hurt throws a wrench in it, but like, there's no way as a Bucks fan that you can feel confident about Budenholzer as your coach. Like the idea that even if they win the title, like because of all these extenuating circumstances that are happening all around the league, there's a world where they win the title and who gives a shit after that? I mean, it's I'm huge Eagles fan. Like we all know I'll take 20 years of the Eagles sucking for that 1 year. So you're good. But if you do anything short of that, whether it's obviously losing this series, even without Giannis, if you lose in the finals, if you have anything like that and you keep Budenholzer as your coach, that is, you know, what happened this year. You can't take that away from them. And it's great for the culture. It's great for all that shit. But at the same time, in the long run, you might be worse off with Budenholzer as your coach, as opposed to maybe Mike D'Antoni or someone else who's out there that could be available this offseason.
Yeah, so. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, all the injuries have like a domino effect in that regard too, because, you know, it had the Bucks lost to the Nets in the second round, had Kyrie not gotten hurt, had Harden not gotten hurt, Budenholzer's probably gone. Rick Carlisle's probably their coach already.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, there is a scenario where, you know, I think Giannis's injury will probably give Budenholzer some leeway, and they're going to have to bring him back next year, especially because a lot of the top options are already off the market now. But yeah, if you're a Bucks fan, you're miserable about that. You're already miserable today.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like that is just a brutal beat. But I mean, I guess, you know,
luckily we have Doc Rivers, so we have nothing to worry about when it comes to playoff coaches choking.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was reminded, you know, like I wrote a piece back in September about like why Ty Lue would be a good fit before Doc even became available. And now seeing what he's doing with the Clippers and what happened with the Sixers.
Yep. I know. I was in the same camp. Having a good regular season coach is awesome, because I think that, especially in the Eastern Conference, getting a top seed is incredibly important. I think that what guys like Budenholzer and Doc have been able to do in the regular season, I commend them for that. But we knew that Ty Lue, and yes, he did have LeBron, of course, but like there are plenty of coaches that had LeBron and did not win a title against, and in specifically the, I believe Ty Lue, that was his first season with the Cavs. They lost the year before to the Warriors. Obviously there were a ton of injuries and stuff like that. There were extenuating circumstances in that situation. But the playoff resume and the fact that he had such a good relationship with his former players, plus I just think he's a good coach. Like I think that he's like a smart tactician. I think that guys like just genuinely like him. He's younger, so if you hit on Ty Lue and he comes in, you helps you contend for titles and potentially win a title, you're looking at, you know, maybe a 10-year coach instead of a 5-year coach. So I always was in the camp of Mike D'Antoni or Ty Lue. I thought Doc Rivers was a fine option, you know, and I'm willing to give him another chance. But it's all those things that I like about Ty Lue are the things that I don't like about Doc Rivers. It's like his teams are generally underprepared in playoff series, big playoff games. Whereas I feel like Ty Lue, it's the opposite. I feel like every big game that they've played where their back is kind of against the wall, they're coming out and they're destroying teams. And then on top of that, you have the relationship element where it's like guys like Kevin Love, who like has historically not been like easy to get along with, likes him. Paul George, another guy who just, it's like, does not have a history of getting along with guys, and they all like him. And it is frustrating, but at the same time, like, I think that any coach that we would have had would not have been able to win this team a title. I've just come to that conclusion. Yeah. And I'm kind of at the point now where I want to see what we can think of in terms of reframing this offseason, kind of thinking from Daryl Morey's perspective. And my first question up top for you is, do you think that there's any chance that Ben Simmons is here next season?
I think a lot of Sixers fans aren't going to want to hear this, but yes, I do. I don't think it's, you know, I don't know what the percentage is in terms of, is he here, is he not here? But especially seeing what's going on with Damian Lillard in Portland, you know, Bradley Beal, Zach LaVine are both up for new deals after this year. I think Morey is not going to sell Ben Simmons for 20 cents on the dollar. So like, you know, a deal, like right when all this started to come to a head, like, you know, Colin Sexton, Kevin Love was a popular framework. CJ McCollum's a popular framework. And I'm sure we'll get into, you know, specific ideas in a little bit. I don't think Morey's going to feel pressure to do a deal that he doesn't think is the right deal for this team. Ben's under contract for 4 more years. And I think the worst case scenario is you see what happens this offseason. Doc says, you know, they know what work he needs to do and like the right type of work, or I forget the exact wording of his quote. But he kind of implied that, like, you know, Ben's been putting in the work, but it wasn't the right type of work. So you're not actually going to improve. We'll see if that changes this offseason. He's already pulled out of the Olympics for quote unquote skill development. So, you know, best case scenario, Ben Simmons comes back and suddenly has a jumper next year. I don't think that's going to be the case, but, you know, we'll see there. But I think, you know, given the potential for a Portland to self-destruct next year, or for Washington or Chicago to get off to a slow start, and, you know, you start hearing, like, you know, Bradley Beal was apparently consulting with Damian Lillard about wanting to stay loyal to a franchise for his whole career. If Bradley Beal sees Lillard at age 31 thinking, like, oh, crap, I might want out here. You know, Lillard signed long-term. Beal is not. So maybe Beal takes that as a sign of, like, this Wizards team's going nowhere. I actually need to get out of here. In which case, you know, there are teams on the market. Like, the Sixers can't match how much OKC or New Orleans can offer in terms of picks. But I think in terms of players and salary matching, Ben Simmons is going to be one of the best chips on the market, despite his playoff limitations. You know, he's a great regular season player. I think if nothing else, this season has proved he's an 82-game player right now. But he's going to beat up on crappy teams in transition next year, and he's going to make you forget all about disappearing in games 5 through 7 of this Atlanta series. And it only takes one GM to think, you know what, I can fix this guy's jumper. I can make this guy start shooting. Like, even if 29 other GMs are out on him, it only takes one team. So yep. I do think there's some value in keeping him, but I, you know, if the right deal comes along, Morey is definitely going to say yes. Like, he is not untouchable by any means.
That's kind of how I feel too. I would lean 90-10, he's gone. I would say I don't think that he would do any sort of 25 cents on the dollar type trade. I don't think that he's going to just give away Ben Simmons for nothing. He understands that Ben is very valuable to a lot of teams and could contribute to winning for a lot of these middle of the pack teams that just want to contend for the playoffs in general. I do think you're exactly right in terms of, if there is a trade out there for, you know, Bradley Beal, Dame Lillard, whatever, what it essentially comes down to is, what do the Sixers have to add now? Because maybe a year ago, let's say, what you were going to add to get Bradley Beal for Ben Simmons, it could have been a one-for-one swap with maybe a first-round pick thrown in. Like, at that point, that could have been the perception.
Right.
You know, Ben is obviously had his ups and downs this year. He had his playoff struggles. I think that we need to kind of reframe that conversation now. But I will say, I just think from beyond court value, what has happened with the media here, what has happened with the fans here, what has happened in that playoff game, seems like it is really, really hard to come back from when it's a mental situation. Like, I don't think that... some of it is skill, obviously. Some of it is Ben not working on his game, Ben not, you know, having a jumper that's reliable in the playoffs, which is something that we've talked about for a while. Him standing in the dunker spot, being passive and all that stuff seems to be more of an issue. The lack of aggression, the lack of just wanting to take a simple dunk at the end of a playoff game to tie it. Like that, all the free throw stuff, like all of that stuff is mental. Mm-hmm. And there is a situation where Ben Simmons comes back and he might have these marginal improvements. I don't think that we're ever going to see Ben Simmons with a reliable jumper. I don't think that we'll ever see Ben Simmons as a three-point shooter, nor do I think that he needs to be a three-point shooter. I think having some sort of mid-range and game outside of the paint would be very reliable. Yeah. But I think that I've said many times, I don't believe that Ben should ever be a three-point shooter because I don't think he will ever be a good one. And it essentially brings you no value come playoff time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that because of the mental aspect of it, it could get worse. Like, there could be a situation where Ben is just like, fuck this. I'm not going to. I mean, you could see a James Harden situation, but obviously for different reasons. Basically, because he knows that the frustrations with Embiid, he knows the frustrations with Doc after the game. He understands that the fan base is against them, that the media is against him. And ultimately, you know, regardless of, you know, how I feel about Ben, I think that my opinion on him as a player is still relatively the same. My opinion on him as a person is still a little bit clouded just because of everything that has happened and everything that's come out over the last few months. But I think ultimately the right situation for him is moving to another team and trying to figure that out. I know that Rich Paul and Daryl Morey sat down last week to discuss his future with the team. Woj reported on that. These kind of things don't happen if a guy isn't get traded. Like, there are rare situations where it does bleed over into the next year. There are situations like the Kyle Lowry situation where there are all these reports that he's going to get traded and blah, blah, blah. And it doesn't happen because the right package isn't out there and blah, blah, blah. All that stuff. This is a different situation than most of those situations.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that Ben is clearly mentally not here with the team. And whatever's going on in his personal life, you know, it's obviously terrible. And you never want anyone to ever have to go through anything that he's going through. But at the same time, I don't see a situation where he can come back to the Sixers and be the same player. And if he is the same player in the regular season, I still think that in the back of everyone's mind, they would be like, who gives a shit?
right. Like, I mean, that's the problem. Like, we saw this. If this was just a one-off, it'd be one thing. But this is now three straight years. You know, he was hurt, obviously, in the 2020 season. But, like, 2018, 2019, and now this. And it's the same story every time. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be similar to, you know, kind of the how we treated the Bucks during the regular season this year. Where it's like, you guys fooled us twice. We don't care about what you do during the regular season anymore. Prove that you can actually beat someone in the playoffs. And, you know, to their credit, I guess they did make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. So if Ben Simmons, you know, if he starts shooting jumpers next year, like you, I don't think it's going to happen at a high degree. And I'm totally with you. Like, if I'm planning Ben Simmons offseason work, it is inside out. So free throws right at the rim. Mid-range post game, like, I would just lock him in a gym with Tobias Harris and just have Tobias show up, like, here's how I create for myself, you know, with my post game. I can have that turnaround jumper that he really got comfortable with this year. If Ben had that, he doesn't need to be a three-point shooter. You're totally right, they have enough three-point shooting elsewhere on the roster. He just needs to be somewhat of a threat in the half court, which he is not. And maybe some of that falls on Doc too. I mean, you know, people were questioning Doc all year about Ben and his lack of scoring. And Doc was like, nothing to see here. Don't worry about it. You know, I focus on everything else. Yeah. It's like, and like, you know, that it is fair. Ben does a lot of other really good things for this team. And I don't want the focus on his scoring to cloud, you know, everything else, because like defensively he's elite. In transition, he's elite. As a facilitator, he's like always among the league leaders in terms of creating three-point shots for others. And the Sixers will miss that if they lose him. But, you know, you get to the fourth quarter of a playoff game and you're having to call timeout to pull him off of the floor. You just can't do that with a max player.
Right. What it comes down to is a lot of Ben's skill set, everything that he's good at, is great. But in today's NBA, the majority, not all, obviously some superstars are great at all the things you mentioned, you know, playmaking, all the defense, all that stuff. There are stars and superstars who have that element of their game, but the majority of those things are usually done by role players. Mm-hmm. And you can acquire role players that will fit a lot of the production that you can get from Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
And when it comes down to the fundamental issue of not being able to play a player at the end of a big playoff game, that's a max player. That is where I understand the criticisms of both Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris. I think that the criticisms of Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris are almost totally different, because I think that Tobias Harris was asked to do things that he probably shouldn't be doing. Now, should he have a max contract too? No, he shouldn't. But the reality is he does. And he was great in the regular season for us, just like Ben, and even had his moments in the playoffs, just like Ben, and games in the playoffs, just like Ben.
Yeah.
And of course, he disappears down the stretch once Atlanta's able to adapt. He's not, you know, his jumper isn't falling quite as much. He's blowing layups, like these things that truly should be not what you want from a max player. But I do think that if the Sixers were able to leverage the Ben Simmons situation and get a true number one option, that either having Tobias Harris as your third scoring option would be one of the best third scoring options in the NBA, or using him to move in another trade, especially if you were able to somehow get a Damian Lillard. If there were a situation where you could acquire Damian Lillard, I think you would probably try to move off Tobias just because of the contract situation. Like, you're going to end up spending $120 million basically on three players. Mm-hmm. And that situation is not sustainable for the long term. And you can sell high on Tobias Harris right now, coming off a sub all-star season, had his best year in years under Doc, like all that stuff. I like Tobias, but like, if you are to move off Ben and you think that you lose that defensive playmaking, you're not going to get that from a guy like Tobias. And as good as Damian Lillard is, those aren't his strong suits either. He's mainly a perimeter scorer, shooter, those things. He's a decent playmaker, but he's not like an elite one. Mm-hmm. So let's move over into just kind of discussing some of those star trades that we've talked about, like guys that are clearly better than Ben Simmons. Mm-hmm. Now, in these situations, these players are going to have to ask out this summer, and they would have to also put the Sixers high on their list. Yep. Because as we know with star trades, stars get what they want. I mean, it's just the reality. Yeah. Stars will get what they want. They'll have a list of teams, and I think for a guy like Damian Lillard, it's a little bit different of a situation.
Yes.
For two reasons. The first reason is Dame doesn't seem to be the kind of star that's like, I don't want to play in X market. Mm-hmm. I don't want to play. Like, if you told Dame, okay, we're going to trade you to New Orleans, which a lot of players don't like going there, but you get to play with Zion Williamson and like Nikhil Alexander Walker's on the come up with me. They re-sign Lonzo Ball. Like, there are situations for smaller markets because he's locked up for 4 years. Mm-hmm. These are guys that they will never, ever get in free agency.
Right.
Which is kind of similar to the Ben situation where it's like Ben's never signing in Cleveland in free agency, but yeah, maybe
like Minnesota.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Minnesota, Cleveland, all these markets. So with the Dame situation, there's that element of it. And then there's also the element of just the fact that, like I said, like he's locked up for 4 years. He makes a lot of money, but generally speaking, when these guys force their way out of situations, they have a lot of leverage because they either have a year left, or like in the James Harden situation, they have 2 years left. So they can say, well, if you trade me there, I'm just not going to try. And then I'm going to leave in free agency in a year. And no team wants to trade for that player.
Right. Or so, you're not going to give up, like, I mean, it was like Anthony Davis in Boston a couple years ago.
Right.
Where he was like
Kawhi to Toronto. Like,
So like, it was like, I'm, you know, I would still, I'm sure Danny Ainge had one of his almost trade conversations, but like, you're not going to offer your best package for a guy who you don't think is going to be, you're going to be able to re-sign. Like, you offer more for Damian Lillard than you would for Bradley Beal if you think Bradley Beal is a flight risk in 2022.
Absolutely. So that, Dame is obviously the biggest name that could potentially be available this summer, just based on some of the reports we've heard coming out. The whole situation there is very fucked up, and Portland has no fucking idea what they're doing. You know, I don't really want to go too far into that, but obviously Neil Olshey is completely shitting the bed with this Chauncey Billups situation.
Yes.
The fact that he would be hired in the first place is fucking ridiculous. And beyond that, that's all I really have to say about that.
Yep.
The Damian Lillard situation, now Dame is basically on the fence about staying or leaving. I personally think he'll probably try to stay for one season, try to work things out, see how it goes, and then we'll go from there. But let's just hypothetically say he asks out. So One of the things with these Ben trades that I keep going through in my mind, which is essentially like Ben doesn't help two types of teams. He doesn't help the teams that are currently contending. Mm-hmm. And unless there is some sort of swap where they don't really give up much. And then in that situation, it's like, what, why are we even doing this? Because he is kind of a hard fit because of the lack of shooting, the fact that he doesn't protect the rim. So he can't really play the five all that much. So unless you have a rim protecting four, which is pretty rare, like, you know, like in Denver, I can think of, they usually have a rim protecting four around Jokic, but mm-hmm. like these situations are pretty rare. So he doesn't really fit cleanly in a lot of teams. So the contenders are kind of off the table. And then he doesn't really benefit a team that's like, well, if we're getting rid of Damian Lillard, we might as well just fucking suck.
Like,
there's no point. We're not going to get a player as good as Damian Lillard back. Then we're just going to pivot to a rebuild and we'll go from there. So that's why my first trade here, it actually involves Cleveland. But it is kind of in that, having that in mind.
Gotcha.
The Blazers probably move CJ McCollum in another trade. Nurkic maybe opts out or whatever, because he said yesterday he doesn't want to come back if Dame isn't back.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is the beginning of the rebuild for the Blazers. And if any Blazers fans are listening to this, I'm sorry. I know he's like the best. He's like the best player in your franchise, and you might fucking hate this trade. But like, I'm trying to live in somewhat of reality here, but like, it's still hard to kind of figure these things out. So this trade is the Cavaliers get Ben Simmons and George Hill for contracts. Okay. The Sixers get Damian Lillard and Derek Jones Jr. for contracts. And then the Blazers get Kevin Love. I know that we were just like, oh, that sucks, right? Okay, but there's obviously more to this. Colin Sexton, who is going into the last year of his rookie deal, but could potentially be a breakout guy. I think I'm higher on Sexton than your average like NBA Twitterer.
I am too. I like him.
Yeah, I think he's, I mean, in the right situation, I think that he gets better every year. He's a really hard worker. He has that skill set that we're seeing is very beneficial in the playoffs. He can create his own shot. He's decent in the mid-range. Like, he can shoot. Like, I know he's undersized, but like, I've seen too many of these like quote unquote bucket getter guys have mm-hmm. such success in the modern playoffs, just because I think that every player can do a little bit more and can generate their own offense, that I think that he could be a player moving forward that actually could have some value. So Colin Sexton, Kevin Love, and then from the Sixers, Tyrese Maxey, Shake Milton, three first round picks, from one from Cleveland. Okay. So Cleveland uses that to get off of the Kevin Love contract. They throw in Sexton. The Sixers send 2021, 2023, and then they do swaps in 2022 and 2024. So essentially, the Sixers are really giving up two first-round picks because the odds of those swaps ever being in the favor, unless Embiid has some sort of catastrophic injury or something like that. And then you might be asking yourself, well, why wouldn't the Cavs just try to go after Dame themselves? Well, Dame's not going to put the Cavs on his list.
No.
And they're not anywhere close to contending. So if you just have to give up Kevin Love, Colin Sexton, and a first-round pick, and you get Ben Simmons, I think that could be a situation where it could be beneficial for everyone. And the Blazers essentially get two young guys in Maxey and Sexton. Plus, I know that they're very similar players, so obviously it's kind of hard to figure out. But and then a ton of picks and contract filler. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I actually like that value really for all three teams, because I know like Love and Sexton for Simmons has been a popular framework. And like the clear rebuttal is, what does Cleveland need to add in addition to that? Because like Love and Sexton alone aren't going to get it done. You know, I think with any Simmons trade, I should just preface this before we go into, you know, specifics here. I think the Sixers need to get back a lead guard, because they just don't have a way to get one otherwise, barring if you find a Reggie Jackson or a campaign on a minimum contract, great, but you probably aren't going to do that. And like, you know, it's just really hard to find those guys. And even still, those guys have been really good, but like Cam wasn't starting for the Suns for most of the year. He filled in for Chris Paul a couple times. And Reggie Jackson, you know, it's like the nominal starting point guard for the Clippers, but he's not in that like lead playmaker role. Most of their offense flows
He's also
through.
Best friends with Paul George and signed right. there because of that. So.
Yeah, like he's not coming to Philly on a minimum contract or even like the taxpayer mid level. And they're, you know, realistically, they're most likely going to only have, at best, they'll have a non-taxpayer mid level, probably going to have the taxpayer mid level. So they're not going to have a ton of ways to get a free agent point guard, and the free agent point guard market kind of sucks, like unless you're really that high on Dennis Schroeder. So yep. like
and for anyone listening, the taxpayer bid level is between $5 and $6 million, which is what the Sixers yeah. will have to work with this summer for free agency.
Yeah, and then the non-taxpayer is around 9.5 for next year. So again, like that's not going to get you anyone who you could confidently say is a starting point guard on a championship caliber team. So like getting in a guy like Dame, I would do that deal from the Sixers' perspective. I'm doing it from the Cavs' perspective. And then, as you said, from Portland, it's really, where do you go from here? If you can flip CJ elsewhere, which I think you probably should be able to do. It's Absolutely. Not like he has negative trade value, but, you know,
neutral,
starting
probably.
With Maxey and Sexton in your backcourt is super interesting. You don't have to overpay Norman Powell at that point, because that's where you're headed if you're Portland. Like, you know, they are trapped where they can't replace him in free agencies, so they're going to have to overpay to re-sign him, and then they're going to be a tax-paying team with no realistic championship window. So, like, these are the hard decisions that you have to make as at it, when you're in that, like, I don't want to call it purgatory because you're a playoff team every year, but when you're in that tier of, let's like where Indiana is right now, where it's like we can confidently say we'll win between 40 and 50 games, but there is no realistic way, barring this catastrophic wave of injuries that we're seeing in these playoffs, that we're going to be a championship caliber team. So do we decide to hit reset? Because this is the time where when Dame has 3 or 4 years left on his deal, when CJ has 3 years left on his deal, this is when you can get the most value for these guys. If you wait, like Washington has, where they tread water for a couple of years, and now Bradley Beal has 1 year left on his deal, you run the risk of get to the trade deadline and there's 2 months left and he decides he wants out, you're just not going to get as much
yep.
as you wanted before. So, you know, from Portland, like, yeah, I mean, I guess the question is that enough for Damian Lillard? Because the 2021 pick from Philly is number 28. So, you know, has value because you're getting a guy on a 4-year rookie contract locked in at that price, but like not a super high pick. The odds of you finding a contributor there are not especially high. You have to figure the 2023 pick is probably not going to be great. I guess, as you said, if Embiid goes down, you know,
the Cleveland one could be pretty good though.
That's true.
Because yeah. they're not going to trade the third pick for Ben this year. They're just not going to do that. Like, I mean, it's all the things we're talking about. It's the flexibility, which Cleveland has not had really. They've kind of backed themselves into a corner, having to pay Colin Sexton and Jared Allen this offseason and next offseason. Like, they're kind of in a weird situation in terms of like having to pay guys and figure that stuff out. Whereas if you're Portland, you could look at this trade and be like, all right, there might be upside to that 2023 Cleveland pick. Mm-hmm. There might be a chance that by 2024, 2026, whichever swaps you can get from the Sixers, that the Sixers are just terrible. And then if you're Neil Olshey, this essentially takes you from being that purgatory team to you can quickly be a rebuilding team, suck for next year, and then maybe hit in the draft and then have a few good young players that you can then essentially go to ownership and be like, look, I have these guys. Like
right.
our future is bright, and winning 40 games in the West and losing in the first round is not the way to build towards a championship or a contender or whatever. This is the new way, and you might get 4 more years out of it if you're Neil Olshey. So that's realistically what these GMs are trying to do. Like, I actually put my tier one of teams that would be interested in Ben are desperate teams / desperate GMs.
Yeah, but you're totally right. But I mean, Olshey might be screwed either way, just given how this offseason has gone. But you know, going back to your point about like which teams Ben would help or which teams Ben should be interested in, I think you make a good point that, you know, all 30 teams are going to pretend that their goal is to win a title every year. That isn't the case for most teams. Like, most teams are content just contending to get into the playoffs, and maybe you win one series at best, in which case Ben Simmons is a super helpful player because you're not going to have his limitations affect you, since you're not a real title contender anyway.
Exactly. And that's why I have in this tier, I have Cleveland, Minnesota, and Portland in there. Yeah. I feel like all of those GMs are on the hot seat for different reasons. I feel like those are the kind of teams that you're describing right now that kind of just want to go from being like bad to decent. Mm-hmm. And as you said, helpful player in the regular season. I think on the court wise, Minnesota is actually the best fit for Ben. Like,
yeah.
Stretch big, obviously. Karl Anthony Towns is like the best shooting big I've ever seen. So that certainly helps. The fact that it depends on what you would have to give up for Ben, because right. Obviously there are situations where it's like, yeah, he would be a great fit, but you're not just plugging him into a team. Like, mm-hmm. unless that team has cap space and the Sixers like a guy on like a rookie contract, which doesn't really seem all that realistic. So before we move on to Minnesota, I have a Minnesota deal that is not actually the Sixers getting back anything from Minnesota, but it could be attached to another deal. Okay. But let's go with the non-Damian Lillard trade to Portland, which could be if Dame wants to stay. I don't think a CJ for Ben straight up swap would happen. I think that if the Sixers get CJ, that Seth, as much as Seth was awesome, and I love Seth, he becomes a little bit more expendable just from the perspective of the Sixers of, okay, we're losing Ben's defense. Mm-hmm. We would obviously love to keep Seth on his contract, and he's a huge value and blah, blah, blah. But if they're getting CJ, which I don't even think I would do this deal, by the way, yeah. I'm just saying that if there were a deal, my idea was you get back a little bit more defense, bring Robert Covington back to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So you get CJ, Rocco, and then you try to steal from Portland, maybe they're a little bit desperate, and you try to steal from them Anfernee Simons, who can fill a little bit of that Seth off the bench kind of shooter that you would need. Although they're going, we're getting Seth, who's a little bit older. We're getting Ben, who's a great defender, but Robert Covington's a good defender too, and he shoots threes and blah blah blah. So the Blazers would get Ben, Seth Curry, and Shake Milton. I don't think I would do this deal. Just from, I don't even know if I would do it from either team's perspective, but I think a framework, something like that could work, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on in terms of Ben, CJ, one-on-one. Again, you're not bringing back elite guard if you're Philly. So like, where do you turn at that point? You know,
he could be a really good two guard.
Like, right,
If CJ's your second best guard, then you're in great shape. And Portland has been in pretty good shape for a while. They just don't have anything outside of those guys.
Right, and like if you're just talking a one-on-one swap, you know, you're having a CJ-Seth backcourt, like really potent offensively, a absolute crime scene defensively. Like if we thought Seth got targeted in the playoffs, imagine what Seth and CJ together. So, right.
I mean, we just saw with the Jazz, like... Like, I mean, having no perimeter defense and having a defensive-minded center, you're going to get absolutely roasted in some series. Obviously, I think Embiid's a little bit different of a defender mm-hmm. than Rudy. But at the same time, like, if teams just go five out, like, and you have your perimeter defenders as Seth Curry and CJ, you've essentially just reversed the problem.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, I like your idea of adding more, like, bringing back Covington would just be fun from a fan perspective as well, but you know, also that makes it a little easier to stomach if they can't re-sign Danny Green, which sounds like a question mark at the moment. So like a lot of this is contingent on, you know, what the other moves are. If the Sixers have a deal lined up somehow to get a point guard, then the CJ deal makes sense. If they don't think they're going to re-sign Danny Green, then getting a Covington back in could make more sense. You know, losing Shake is not a deal breaker for me at all, because, you know, hopefully Maxey is ready to step into that role anyway. Like, I think for all the good the Sixers had in the regular season, and, you know, compared to where they were last year, this was a phenomenal regular season. Shake was the one big disappointment. Like, they were really talking him up coming into the year as like six man of the year candidate, most improved player candidate. Just wasn't right for the role that he had to play. And, you know, you get George Hill in to like take some of the playmaking responsibility off his shoulders. It didn't really, like, he had moments, you know, game two against Atlanta. Like, there were times that he was great, but it, you know, I don't know how much faith you can have in him being your top playmaker off the bench. And I think, you know, what we saw from Maxey and the way they've talked about him all year, I expect him to take a big leap this summer. So yeah, I don't think losing Shake would be the end of the world by any means. You know, Shake, I think his real value to the Sixers beyond just what he brings as a player is what his contract is. And the same goes for Seth Curry. Like having Seth on, you know, $8 million a year for the next 2 years, when you've got three guys on max or neo max deals, those are the types of steals you need. And Shake is on a minimum contract for the next 2 years. Like, are you going to get better than Shake Milton in the free agent market on a minimum deal? Probably not, despite how much Shake struggled this year. Like, we're talking about the Howell Nettos of the world. If we are, you know, like Ish Smith was not a minimum point guard. So I think you have to value kind of, you know, the same goes for Korkmaz, who I'm thinking about.
Can we
about.
Get Shabazz Napier out of retirement?
yeah. Like, they're going to be.
That's the kind of guy, though. Like, that's like Tyreek Evans was a guy. Like, his suspension is, I know he's more of a two guard, but like a bench, thinking of like bench creators, like, that's a guy coming off a 2 year suspension for drugs. And he literally came into my mind yesterday, because those are the kind of like out of the box moves that you kind of have to think of when you're trying to construct a team with three max contracts. Like, no one thought campaign was going to be anything. No one thought Reggie Jackson was going to be able to revive his career like this. Like, these guys that are now contributing to playoff teams, and you're, and also, by the way, Tyreek Evans is just random, but like, he kind of fits that mold of Maury reclamation project, like guy in his early 30s, like, Doc loves having a Hooper off the bench, basically. Hooper off the bench. Like, he loves to have that Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams type coming off the bench. Another guy, Lou Williams, no one expected him to be doing this in the playoffs, although his contract is a little bit more. Like, no one expected a 34-year-old Lou Williams to lead the Hawks to a victory over the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. So that's another thing. Maury tends to not trade for guys that aren't locked up for, like, this Danny Green situation that's happening right now is exactly why Maury doesn't make those kind of trades. Like, if Danny doesn't come back, like, obviously you get off the Horford deal, it's a win. Like, you don't really care all that much that Danny Green leaves. But at the same time, he's a starter level player. We saw how important he was to us when he got hurt. You know, we didn't have a reliable guy that, other than Seth, that would just chuck up threes. And you need those kind of players. And Covington's going into the last year of his deal, I believe. Simons is about to get paid, and CJ's locked up. But the problem with CJ is that he just has these injury concerns that, like, a team that is built around Joel Embiid cannot get guys that are just going to be injured all the time.
Yeah.
That's what it kind of, and like, to me, did what Seth did in the playoffs shows me that he can be like 70 to 80% of CJ McCollum. Like, I don't think that the gap between those two is a Grand Canyon the way that it was 3 years ago. I think that it's like CJ is obviously the better player. Like, CJ is like a sub all-star. I think he's like a top 50 guy, but I think Seth's now, like, come playoff time, like, you could rely on him as like a top 80, top 90 guy. And I think that his value to the Sixers on that contract and the fit with Embiid makes him more valuable, that you almost want to hang on to him, kind of similarly what you're saying. So ultimately, I think both teams would probably say no to a trade like that. I don't really think that any deal involving those two is going to happen. You know, like, you hear about these trades, like, you heard about, like, Aaron Gordon was going to get traded for CJ McCollum for, like, 5 years. And then you hear about, like, Harrison Barnes going to go to the Celtics anytime, or Buddy to the Sixers last year. I was like, anytime you hear about this trade for a year, it's never happening. So just get it out of your mind. Like, there have been so few of those deals that are like, oh, the X team is interested in X player, and then that deal actually happens. Like, Oladipo to Miami is the only one I can think of, and that was just a weird situation.
Or like AD to the Lakers, but he kind of forced his way there.
Yeah, exactly. That, yeah, it's like, and also the Lakers just get whatever they want because they're the Lakers.
Right, right.
But all right, so, I will say, no, you can keep going.
I was going to say, just on the note about Tyreek Evans, please don't judge me, but I thought of Jeremy Lin the other day as one of those outside of the box options as well. Like, that's how desperate they are, though.
That's the thing, is like, here, we've seen this time and time again with like wash players where you're like, oh, this guy's done. He can't play in the NBA anymore. And then they go to a new team and you're like, oh shit, Nicholas Batum, yeah. Oh shit, Blake Griffin, oh shit. Like, you know, all these guys that we've been discussing, Campaign was basically out of the league. Like, there are these guys that like, if you're using your minimum, one of the things that I was actually really disappointed in Morey this year was not really using, one, the taxpayer mid-level, which I knew you brought up before,
yeah,
which I think part of that was because they didn't want to go further into the tax unless they knew the team was a title team and blah, blah, blah. I understand that. But at the same time, when you have Joel Embiid in his prime and he's having an MVP season, use that fucking thing because this is going to be your best shot. And in addition to that, the only vet minimum guy we got was Dwight Howard. And like, I love having these young guys at the bench mob, like Isaiah Joe and Paul Reed and stuff, but like, they're not going to help you if Doc is your coach. Like, Doc is never playing these. Like, you could see what Ty Lue is doing with Terrence Mann right now. And like, I made a joke about this the other day, which is like Terrence Mann isn't even like Tyrese Maxey's age. Like, he's not like 19 or 20. Like, he's 24 years old. He was a 23-year-old rookie last year. In the bubble, he turned 24. Like, the idea that like he wouldn't be ready for these kind of situations that he's playing very well in right now, it's just not true. And like, if Doc is your coach, Morey as a GM needs to know he's not going to play these guys. And like, that's why like I love having guys on rookie contracts. I love having like all that shit. But at the same time, like, if Isaiah Joe is 21 years old next year, like, is Doc going to play? Like, maybe he's in a second year. Like, he kind of has to, whatever. But like, I would rather just stack the bench with veteran guys now. And just until Doc is gone, just try to go that way and use your veteran minimums, use your taxpayer mid-level and fill out the bench and maybe trade some of these younger guys and get in vets so that you actually know that you're going to, you know, play them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, know your personnel is a saying in the NBA. For Morey, know your personnel includes Doc. Like, you have to know that this guy, you know, and I thought, like, we'll see if they can do anything with Tolliver this offseason, but, like, that being the big buyout acquisition was also just kind of a dud, because I thought, like, you know, I thought, honestly, it was to prevent Doc from using Mike Scott in the playoffs. Yep. Which was okay, good, but like, if neither of those guys are getting any run, then you're just wasting this roster spot.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, I think that there was someone else that was out there that they were like, oh, we're getting this guy. And then it just didn't happen. My guess would be it was like Dwayne Dedman or Mike Muscala or one of these guys that was like going to get bought out or like was on the free agent market, but then decided to go in another direction. And actually Dedman, like, I know the Heat got swept in the first round, but like, he was actually pretty good for them.
Yeah.
And he was one of the guys that I was interested in. Muscala too. Muscala clearly just wanted to stay in Oklahoma City and did not care to play. So, so I think that situation, obviously, but like, those are the little moves that like, if someone gets injured in the playoffs, like, you just need to be able to plug guys in. Like, I think Glenn Robinson the third sucks, but like, even if you just had a body like him that you could throw in, and I know that he wouldn't work in Philly specifically just because of the whole weird situation that happened here last year. It didn't really seem like he wanted to be here, but like, having a guy like that, or like Gerald Green, who they were like apparently interested in at one point, and like, just having a guy that like, when Danny Green gets hurt, that like, you might be able to rely on, that could be like just something, would have been nice to have in the playoffs. And like, I love these young guys and I hope that they can turn into players for the Sixers, but like, if your window is now, like, they can go for all I think. But all right, so let's move on to, off of the Portland situation, let's go down to Minnesota, because unless Minnesota is willing to part with certain players, which I don't think they're going to be willing to part with, apparently they're very interested in Ben Simmons. A report came out from a Minnesota reporter this week. Rosas has the relationships with Morey from Houston. I believe, did Rosas work for the Sixers at some point too? I think he might have under Hinkie.
I don't remember.
I know that there's definitely some sort of relationship there. And then in addition to that, I think they're desperate to win right now with Karl Anthony Towns, so they can try to. And by the way, I hear a lot of people say like, oh, like, why are you doing all this for a guy who's never won anything and never done anything? But when are we going to learn our fucking lesson with this shit? Like, isn't this the same thing people said about Trae Young and Devin Booker and all these? And like, I love Devin Booker. Awesome guy, like, or awesome player, like dope, like whatever. But like, Karl Anthony Towns is better than Devin Booker, in my opinion. Like, if you could build the right team around him, similarly to what the Suns have done right now, like, mm-hmm. I think that I would probably take the risk on Karl Anthony Towns being, and I know that he has the defensive limitations, and I know that he has all this stuff, but like, I'm just like, a big that can shoot like that, that can pass like that, that can, like, you can run your offense around, like, I would definitely be interested if I were a team that didn't have Joel Embiid in getting a guy like Karl Anthony Towns in a trade. And like, people like still just like, oh, you shouldn't build around him. He hasn't won anything. And I'm like, those teams fucking suck every year. Wiggins was his, other than the Jimmy year, which was just a weird year, and Towns was like 21 or 22. Like I think that like we get so caught up in like guys who haven't won anything without taking the context into our opinions at all.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And Levine's probably going to fall into the same camp, but like, take Levine and put him on the Sixers, especially if they don't have to give up Ben Simmons, and you're going to be saying, like, Levine would be an all-star.
Yeah, exactly. So, and he already is. And on top of that, like he's those are the kind of players. I am a little bit conflicted after I said that, because I'm like real Hooper pilled right now. Like, where I'm like, but give me Booker, get me buckets kind of thing. But at the same time, like I just think that like the upside of a guy like Karl Anthony Towns that we see from, like, you know, I don't think he's as good as Jokic, but like, similar kind of player offensively. And just like, I think that like right now Minnesota should be trying to put the right pieces around him, and like, they're fucking Minnesota, dude. Like, they're Minnesota.
Yeah, you're getting no one in free agency. You have Towns and now Edwards, who came on really strong in the second half of that season. Like, if you can get a third piece around those guys and shore up your defense, which has been a tire fire for years, which Ben would help with. Like, do I think Towns, Ben, and Edwards are going to win a title together in the next 2 years? No, but like, could they be competitive enough to, be in the race for a play-in spot? Yeah, probably. As you said, depends on what they give up. But like, you know, they have a nice foundation. It's just they've screwed up a lot on the periphery.
Absolutely. And now, another thing, Rosas, like, going into his third year, I know that ownership there wants to compete. They want to keep Kat. They want to have him happy. Ben and Kat have at least somewhat of a relationship. The thing is, what you just brought up is, like, I don't think that they would ever be willing to part with Anthony Edwards. And that is where they become not a desirable trade partner.
Yeah.
Because you go, D'Angelo Russell, I think that D'Angelo Russell has gotten a little bit of a bad rap just because he's been in really weird situations that he's thrown around all the time. And like, he's a very good passer, and he's actually become a pretty good 3-point shooter. And like, in the right situation, I think that he could be a valuable player, but I don't want to be playing that, just like Ben, like, I don't want to be paying that player the max.
Right.
And, in this situation, I'm thinking Hail Mary trade from Minnesota to try and make Kat happy, win now. They might be willing to give up Edwards, but I don't think that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
So, because if Kat leaves, then you're fucked. Like, if Kat asks out in a year anyway, you're stuck with Ben and whoever else is left over, Russell. So maybe they try to make the Kat Russell thing work. In this situation, it would be a 3-way trade for Bradley Beal. Part of the reason why I think that I really want us to trade for Bradley Beal is because I'm very scared he could just be a free agent next year, and Boston's he's best friends with Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
They have the flexibility now. They got off the Kemba deal. They have the Horford deal, which will be much easier to move. They could probably create some cap space and actually just sign Beal straight up, which would be a nightmare.
You're not wrong.
And so it's kind of like the Harden situation where you're trading for him to keep him away from the Nets.
Yeah.
So Washington would get Edwards, Maxey, Rubio, 2 firsts and 2 swaps from the Sixers. The Sixers would get Beal, and then Minnesota would get Ben. I don't think Minnesota would do this deal.
Yeah, that's right. That would be the deal breaker. But if you swap out if they swap out Edwards
for Russell, yeah, I guess. But well, the thing is, like, why does Washington want Russell? Like,
yeah, like, and he's like best friends with Kat, so I don't know if they...
That's the thing, is that you're trying to keep those two happy, which, by the way, you're doubling down on something that probably wasn't a good decision to begin with.
Right,
like Wiggins in the seventh pick, you would obviously take that over D'Angelo Russell. But at the same time, you've seen the way that the problem is, you've seen the players that have succeeded in this playoffs, and they look a lot like Anthony Edwards.
Yeah.
Another thing is that then maybe you could, maybe if you flip Maxey to Minnesota with Ben, and then Washington's just like, we got Edwards, we took on the Rubio contract just to make the money work, and then we got all these picks from the Sixers, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem for Minnesota. Like, outside of their big three, they don't have a ton of value to offer. Like, you know, maybe Washington's interested in Malik Beasley instead, or like Jaden McDaniels. But are those guys like centerpiece for a Bradley Beal deal? You know, maybe they look at what Houston did with Harden and say, yeah, like, we're just going to suck for a couple years and we're going to get a ton of picks out of this deal. Like, maybe you're willing to do that, but like, if I'm Minnesota, I'm not offering Anthony Edwards in a Ben Simmons deal.
I agree. I actually wouldn't do it if I were them either. I think that for the long run, I think you, first off, if you want to keep your job, you could say, look, I got this guy, Anthony Edwards. He's 20 years old and he's going to be a superstar. Like, I think that he's at least shown flashes that he could be that Donovan Mitchell, Victor Oladipo type player, and when he was actually good. Right. And you can say, you know, we gotta just think about a big picture. And like, if Kat leaves, we'll just get a bunch of things to build around him. So I don't think Minnesota would do this. I just want to throw that out there. But I think that maybe you could have a situation. But Washington seems to either want to compete right now, like that's like their goal. I don't know if it's to keep Beal happy, or they probably would just do a hard reset and try to get a guy like Edwards. I think that ultimately a Beal situation is going to be just like a Dame situation, where the Sixers are going to have to find a third team, get some interesting pieces to throw to them, and then, because Ben just does not have that much value for a team like Washington, especially with the weird fit with Westbrook. Like,
oh God, it'd be awful.
That would be awful. Absolutely terrible. So that's kind of where I'm at with that situation. I don't really like the problem with trading with Minnesota and Cleveland is they're bad teams. Making trades with them, you have to get other teams involved, and then you obviously want a better player than Ben. So it is very hard. So let's move to the second tier, which is the tier of teams that want to compete. We'll just run through these. I have a few of these. So San Antonio, you discussed this on your podcast.
Yep.
DeJounte Murray is a player that I think is in a similar mold to Ben Simmons. He's a ball handler, defensive first guy. He's gotten a lot better over the last few years as a shooter and a scorer from inside the arc. I think that if you were to trade Ben, I don't know if you saw this, but he tweeted the Bruce Bowen said Pop would do anything to get Ben Simmons on his team. Like, he would give up anyone. And Murray actually sent back like the crying face emojis, maybe that deal's dead then. But the idea here was you would build him, because having Murray and Ben, and even if you bring back DeRozan on the same team, just makes really no sense. So the deal would be, and I don't know if San Antonio would do this, by the way, but the deal would be DeJounte Murray, a sign and trade with DeMar DeRozan to get some sort. I know that DeRozan's had his pitfalls just like Ben has in the playoffs. When he's the lead guard, like, that's the situation that you're running into with a lot of these second and third tier teams. DeRozan sign and trade, and then you take a flyer on Lonnie Walker.
Yeah. I mean, I like it from Philly's side, and I don't think DeMar DeRozan is re-signing with the Spurs, trade him or get something, or he just walks for nothing. So, like, you're not giving up that much from the Spurs' perspective. For the Sixers, sign and trades just get tricky because you're going to get hard capped. So it really depends on how much DeMar DeRozan wants. Like, if that costs them Danny Green, if Danny Green were like willing to re-sign with the Sixers, but because they signed and traded for DeMar DeRozan, they lose out on Danny, that's probably where I draw the line. I would want Murray, and I'd want, I mean, this is what the problem that we ran into with the Spurs. like, I don't think they're going to give up Devin Vassell. Mm-hmm. Or like Lonnie Walker, I think they could because he's heading into the last year of his deal. Maybe they'll want to pay up for him. You know, honestly, Patty Mills would be a guy. Maybe instead of DeRozan, I would just try to get Patty Mills instead on a much cheaper sign and trade.
Yeah, makes sense. I had that idea too. I think that he'll probably make somewhere. He could be another value guy. He's very similar to Seth. He doesn't handle the ball as much as Seth. He functions a little bit more as like a JJ type, who's just kind of running off screens and you know, setting screens and shooting threes. And I think I would like that, to have a guy like that to come off the bench. I know that your co-host on the podcast, I'm forgetting his name right now, but he said basically his rebuttal to this would be, you're getting a lot of Ben Simmons production with DeJounte Murray already, and he makes half as much money as Ben Simmons does for the next 4 years. Like, yep. Do you really want to do that deal? But I guess if you're trading for Ben Simmons, the idea isn't we're trading Ben Simmons for DeJounte Murray. We're trading DeJounte Murray for what Ben Simmons could be with our developmental staff. We know that he's already an all-star. Could we make him into a superstar with our shooting coach? Can we get him in a new situation? Because the Spurs, because they want to be so competitive all the time, they don't really have any like paths to stars.
Right.
They don't get them in free agency. They're never bad enough to get them in the draft. And this could be a situation where, like, look, we can say all we want about, oh, well, they're not going to do whatever, blah, blah, blah. Everyone said the same thing when they did the Kawhi Leonard trade. Like, mm-hmm. DeMar DeRozan was not thought to be, he was coming off bad playoffs after bad playoffs, and they were just like, look, he's the best player we can get. Yep. We can get a pick, and we can get Jakob Poeltl. We can get some young guy out of it. Like, basically, we're the Spurs, and we'll figure it out. And I do think DeMar DeRozan has gotten better since the Raptors days, too. Like, I think he's a better player than he was than when he was on. And I think that if you were to trade for DeMar DeRozan and DeJounte Murray, you have to get rid of Tobias Harris. Because then you have four guys who literally live in the mid-range.
Right.
And it just wouldn't be functional.
The hard cap concerns as well would really limit your ability to round out the rest of your roster. But I mean, from the Spurs perspective, if it's just like remove the everything else and it's just Murray for Simmons as the main foundation, Murray's earning less, but Ben is a better player, at least in the regular season, than Murray is. So as you're saying, like if you're the Spurs and you don't have that pathway to a top 25 player, this is your chance to upgrade, and you probably don't have to give up that much in terms of value beyond Murray to get him. And from the Sixers side, like Murray would fill a lot of the same holes that Ben does, but I think in different ways. So, you know, he's a better point of attack defender than Ben. He's not going to be as versatile. He's not going to be able to guard, you know, fours like Ben can, but you know, the Trae Youngs, the De'Aaron Foxes, even the Colin Sextons of the world have given Ben and the Sixers a lot of trouble over the years because Ben is the nominal point guard. So having Murray there, I think, could help kind of stem the tide of those types of players. And as we've seen in these playoffs in particular, those types of players get really dangerous. So it would really help to have someone like that. So, yeah, I like the idea of if you can work with the Spurs, get Murray back and get something else of value, that's one that I'd be much more interested in than like a CJ McCollum swap.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I think it gives you a little bit more flexibility. Also, you take a shot on Lonnie Walker. Like, you know, I know that he has been bad for a good chunk of his career, but like I see the athleticism, I see the shooting, I see a good player in him. I just don't know where he'll be able to really unlock that. All right, so moving on from the Spurs, which apparently that seems like it could be a likely destination, but I'm not sure really how they'll work that out. Another thing is the Spurs have cap space, so they don't have to send out a ton to get back Ben.
Yeah.
So, okay. So the Hornets are another team that I've heard mentioned just because I think Michael Jordan's just always like, let's win now, let's do it. The thing about the Hornets is like, if you already have LaMelo, is it smart to put all of your resources in a player like Ben Simmons when, like, LaMelo's probably going to be one of the very few players who are better in transition than Ben Simmons eventually? And he's a similar type player. I mean, he's obviously very different in that, like, he shoots the ball and, like, he is much more functional within the half court and, like, showed you so much as a rookie that, like, the idea of what LaMelo Ball can be is probably best optimized by having shooting around him. And having, you know, other guys who can be kind of like ball handlers like Ben, but guys who might also be more willing to shoot. I actually kind of like the idea of what they're building down there already. But if, let's just say, I actually have no interest in taking back Gordon Hayward in a trade like this.
Zero.
Once again, injuries. You can't take back guys that are like, I like Gordon Hayward. Like, I think he's a good player. But, like, if you're getting back a guy who just always has injuries and Joel Embiid's your best player, it's not going to work. So. Yeah.
And Terry on that Rose, contract, too. Like, if you if you were to be paid $60 million instead of $120, I'm all for it. But
yeah, exactly. Like, it's not the kind of risk you can take.
Yeah.
So the framework here is, and this, in once again, I don't even think Charlotte would do this, but it would be Miles Bridges, Terry Rozier, PJ Washington, and their first this year. So basically a bunch of middling to good players that maybe two Bridges and Washington have some upside. Rozier would be a great fit with Embiid. The Seth fit might be weird. And then the 11th pick in this draft. So basically what you're doing with this trade is you're building up your asset base, hoping that you can maybe find another trade. And you're just surrounding Embiid with Rozier, another shooter, and you're hoping that Bridges and Washington can have some upside, but I don't think either team would do this deal.
I would consider it if I'm Philly. I don't think Charlotte would do it for all the reasons you mentioned, but like Miles Bridges is really good. I guess the question is, how much is he going to get on his next deal? Because he's also up for an extension this offseason. Are you willing to pay?
Yeah.
Like, he's not getting a max, but are you willing to pay 20-plus million annually if you're Philly when you already have Tobias Harris? And that, like, maybe that's the play. If you're Philly and you can get this deal done, you pivot off of Tobias. But, you know, I guess you're right. It's from Philly's side, if you're trading Ben and Tobias and you're trading Ben for, you know, Rozier, yes, but like Bridges and Washington are younger. They're not like ready to compete right away. Like, we're in Embiid's prime right now.
Right. So that's the thing.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if Embiid. That's what makes it hard. Yeah. Cause if he looks at that and he's like, oh, we're taking a step back. Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at too. Like, I just think that like there are, you have to maximize Joel Embiid's prime, and it becomes very hard in a lot of these situations. But at the same time, like, if you can get other teams involved and they were willing to part with one of Bridges or Washington and another team super high on those guys, that could be a situation where, or even they could bring back another guy. I actually had an idea earlier today, which would be, they send the 11th pick in PJ Washington for Christian Wood.
Yeah.
And then it's like, all right, well, if you're doing that, then also maybe you're willing to get rid of Rozier and Bridges. I like Rozier a lot. He's I think that he would be an interesting target in a Tobias trade. I think that I like Bridges a lot too, but I keep seeing like guys like Bridges, like John Collins, like players that are playing with elite shot creators, like LaMelo Ball and Trae Young. And like, while they're awesome, the Sixers don't have one of those. So if the Sixers don't have one of those, their value isn't quite as high because they're not generating a ton of their own offense. They're capable of doing it, but in a playoff situation, those kind of guys, like as lob threats, as guys that are play finishers, I would think would be much more valuable if you already had a Luka Doncic, a Trae Young, a LaMelo Ball. So I think that that's probably a non-starter for the Hornets. And I don't even, as you said, I don't think the Sixers would do it for those reasons unless they already had another trade set up.
Yeah. So it's good value from the Sixers side. It's just like, if it was 2017 or 2018 and we're doing this deal, I say absolutely. But just given where Embiid is in his career, I think you need to kind of focus on like, we still, you know, with Tobias on this contract too, like you can't be taking flyers on 22-year-olds.
Right. That's the thing. And that's we move into another situation that, you know, you mentioned the Pacers earlier, but like this is just going to be a hard thing to figure out because The best trade pieces you're going to get back from the Pacers are Malcolm Brogdon, Caris LeVert, or TJ Warren. And all of them have injury concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Brogdon and LeVert have had injuries all throughout their career. Warren's coming off a major injury. And then so my idea here was Brogdon, LeVert, and the Pacers first. But I just don't see it. I don't see them taking, like, if Embiid's going to miss 30 games a year and Brogdon's going to miss 30 games a year, best of luck, Tobias Harris.
right. Yeah. And from the Pacers side, if you already have Sabonis and Turner and you have Warren, who should be playing the four, you're bringing in Ben Simmons. So now you're going to have four guys who should technically be front court players. Like, you're going to play Ben Simmons at the two, I guess, you know, like,
yeah, it's hard to figure out a trade with them.
Yeah. I think if they, you know, if they're finally willing to break up Sabonis and Turner, I think, like you were talking earlier, it's hard to find a front court guy who fits well with Simmons on both ends of the floor. I feel like Miles Turner is actually the archetype that would.
Yes.
So if the Pacers are willing to move off Sabonis because they think they get more value for him,
they will,
and they can, you know, find a way to get a point guard so they don't mind losing Brogdon. Like, all of a sudden, you know, we came up with, I forget the exact framework, but it was like CJ to Indiana, Ben to Portland, and then Brogdon and Lamb back to Philly. And like, Brogdon has long been on my list with or without Ben of like, this is the guy you need to go after, like, as in terms of a realistic trade target. So I like the idea of it, but I do think it has to be a three-teamer because I just have absolutely no idea why Indiana wants Ben unless they are just blowing this thing up.
It makes a lot of sense. And also, on top of that, like, I like Brogdon a lot too, but the idea of Brogdon was always similar to the idea of Lowry for me, where you add him to the Sixers core already. You try to figure out a trade where you don't have to give up one of your core pieces, and he would be a nice fit with those guys. He could run the half court offense, all that stuff. I do wonder, when he is your main ball handler and focus of the offense, that if come playoff time, you're going to have the same issues that you've had, just lesser, because you have at least four guys around Embiid that can shoot.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm kind of not really in on, honestly, I'm not in on any of these remaining trades, but it is really hard to find one that is just outside of like shooting for the stars type thing that you would be happy with.
Right.
So the Bulls, I just don't think they're going to trade LaVine unless LaVine says this summer, hey, I've changed my mind, I have a year left on this deal, and get me out of here. And if that's the case, totally different situation. You can maybe try to figure out a way where you get a third team involved. I don't know if they would love to get Ben, but maybe they just get back the best player that they can get. Although I don't have sources by any means, but I have heard that if they put LaVine on the trade block, that they think they would be able to get better. They've gotten offers that are better than Ben Simmons, apparently.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then that situation just might not be doable at all. So, all right. So there's really no, okay. Okay. So basically, unless a team values Patrick Williams, that is the situation where like a rebuilding team is like, we really like the upside of him. And the Bulls are like, we could pair Ben with LaVine and Vooch in a win now situation. So you could essentially get, I don't even have a fake trade here because I can't think of a team that would do this.
Yeah.
But if there is a theoretical team out there that's like, we like Patrick Williams and Kobe White, or I don't know, sign and trade with Lauri Markkanen or whatever. And because the Bulls aren't going to give up any more picks. They just had a disaster of a trade where they gave up a top 10 pick for Nikola Vucevic, and they have another one in 2 years that they have to give up. So maybe that's part of the reason why they would want Ben Simmons, and they would want to get better and make that pick a little bit worse because they're not going to get it anyway. So what do you think? Is there any sort of idea that you could think of as you could get some sort of third team and get Ben there without getting LaVine or Vooch back?
Yeah, I mean, this is where probably a sign and trade would come into, like, I have the Lowry sign and trade idea just on the back burner. And I don't know if Toronto, I mean, because he can leave it as a free agent, you're not going to get what you were asking for at the trade deadline. So, you know, if Chicago is willing to send Patrick Williams to the Raptors or shit, even like Kobe White, like, you know, again, from the Raptors perspective, you can't really ask for that much. Anything you're getting back is better than losing him from nothing.
True.
And then the Sixers get, you know, get Lowry, and then like, ideally you get something else back. Maybe the Bulls the send Bulls, out Williams yeah. and Kobe White, and the Sixers get Kobe White as well. Or
right.
The problem for the Bulls is that they just don't have a lot under contract. It's like they have Vooch and LaVine this year. They have non-guaranteed on Thad and Tomas Satoransky. You have Al-Farouq Aminu, who does not have positive trade value. You have Williams and Kobe White. And then you have Troy Brown Jr., who had worth taking a flyer on, but he's going in the last year.
Yeah,
he's going in the last year of his rookie contract as well. So, like, there isn't a ton of value outside of their top few pieces. But if you can, you know, get a team, I know, like, Lonzo Ball is another one where – if you can send one of those guys to New Orleans and Lonzo decided he wanted to come to Philly instead, like right. I prefer Lowry to Lonzo. But I think that's probably your best chance of getting the Bulls involved in a three-team deal that does not include LaVine.
Yeah. And the thing about getting a guy like Lonzo, if you were able to get a third team involved and you could do that, would be that he is the kind of player that actually would make up for a lot that you would lose with Ben. He's a great player in the open court. He can run your transition offense. And then on top of that, he's a decent good defender he's not as good as Ben, obviously, but he definitely still continues to have upside on that side of the ball. He's still very young. He's like 23. And then in the half court, you could maybe talk yourself into him being a better fit with Embiid because he's become a pretty good catch and shoot guy. Mm-hmm. So there's that element of it, but the other element of it with any sort of trade where you're getting Lonzo back to me is like Lonzo is kind of in that archetype that unless he somehow figures out the handle thing, like being able to create his own shot and like finish at the rim or have a mid range, like those are the kind of guys that are less valuable in the playoffs. Like we've seen guys that like even like more recent versions of Danny Green not be quite as accurate because the shots get harder in the playoffs and he's not that great at attacking closeouts and doing all the things that you would want from a player in the modern NBA if he's a 3-and-D guy, right? So that's the one element where I'm like, does Lonzo kind of give you the same issue where like we've never seen him in the playoffs and like maybe he gets to the playoffs and you just paid him $18, $20 million to come to the Sixers and he sucks.
Yeah, so, right.
Like, I mean, let's be honest, that's our history.
Yeah.
So there's that element of it. The other thing with getting Lowry in a trade, while I love Kyle Lowry and it was kind of the same thing I was saying before where I wish we could have added him to this core, he's 35 years old, so we don't know how much he's going to be good for how long. Right. And then in addition to that, you're getting to the point where you're just making Toronto a really good team. Like, Toronto now has a good core of OG Anunoby, Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, and now they have the fourth pick, and then potentially any assets that they would get in a Kyle Lowry side-in trade would potentially make them even better. Like, if they got Patrick Williams and they could develop him. Like, there's just so many, like I would dread having to go up against Nick Nurse and Masai, and like, they don't have any top 20 guys, but like, we didn't think the Hawks did before the season. And obviously Trae Young has made that leap, but like, who knows, maybe they draft Jalen Suggs and he's awesome right away. Right. And like in 2 years, he's a top 20 guy. And you're like, all right, great. Now we just made this powerhouse back in Toronto again. And like that's part of the reason why I was skeptical about trading Ben there is because like, I just think that Ben in their defensive system and like with their development and all that stuff, like I would just be afraid of a situation like that.
Yeah.
All right. So let's just wrap this up. I'm going to hit on a few things here. I wouldn't do this trade, but I'm just throwing it out there. Ben and George Hill for, God damn it, I can't believe I'm saying this. last year we were trying to trade Buddy Hield for Al Horford.
Yeah.
And now it's Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes, and the ninth pick and a future first. I would not do that.
No.
I would not do that. I also don't think Sacramento would do that. I don't think that I think the ninth pick has more value to that team than Ben Simmons does.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to say, but.
Yeah. And like, from the Philly, like, who is your lead guard at that point? Like, Seth Curry is going to be your main point guard at that point.
Right. But these are the kind of trades we're talking about.
No,
so,
I know. Yeah. It's bleak, man.
And from Sacramento, I don't think that Sacramento would do it just because Halliburton and Fox are already awesome at a lot of the things that Ben's awesome at. And at a certain point, like you having so many ball handlers, like you just got to start getting guys that they already have that are like functional off the ball too. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So Golden State's been thrown out there. I just don't see it. Like, are they going to move on from Draymond? Because Draymond is not going to work.
Like, right. Yeah. One of my best friends from college is a Warriors fan, and he has just been like, not even panic texting me, because he's just like so out on Ben. But anytime a Warriors rumor pops up, he's like, what the hell is this? Is this just Maury's revenge for what the Warriors did to the Rockets? Just like leaking stuff about the Warriors. Because I'm with you. Like, I just don't see how it fits with Dre and Ben together.
It doesn't make, I mean, they're too similar in the half court. In fact, Draymond's probably better as a half court offense running through him, because he at least has some threat to shoot from outside, even though he doesn't really do that anymore. And you probably like that.
And he screens better too. Like, Ben
screens better. Yeah.
Does not, you know, for a guy who's 6'11", 240, he should be laying the wood more than he does.
Absolutely. And then, so you have, and also, like, what are you going to get back for them? Like, you're going to get a post-injury Clay. Once again, your ball handler situation's fucked. You're like, Wiggins, like, no thank you. The high picks and Wiseman, like, maybe if you can get a third team that really likes Wiseman in those picks, but I don't know why you would right now. Like, he definitely has more value to the Warriors than he would have to any other team. I don't see that situation happening. So next one, same thing I said, Toronto was next on my list, but that's the same thing. So my last two thoughts here, three thoughts really, are, is there any chance, I know that this is going to make a lot of Sixers fans cringe, but having watched this playoffs and knowing the value of being able to create your own offense and having guys who are just willing shooters and stuff like that, is there any chance that we could figure out a three-team trade where the Sixers get, and Tobias Harris would be traded in this situation too, where the Sixers could get Brandon Ingram? Because I actually think Ingram has kind of gotten underrated a little bit. I think that you obviously don't want him to be like the main piece of your offense, but like, the outside shot's really good. He's obviously not a good defender, but I think a lot of that stuff is effort. And also, like, I'm not really too concerned about defense with when you have Joel Embiid. And then in addition to that, he still has the size. Like, he's a decent passer. He's actually kind of underrated as a passer. He's got a lot of potential assists. I watched some of the games, and he can tend to disappear at times, but I think that's a lot of that is just the offense running through Zion towards the end of the year. And to me, he if you look at his numbers, like, stacked side by side with Tobias, they're actually very similar. And I think that Ingram is more valuable as an offensive player just because of the passing. And also because he doesn't necessarily have to operate in the same space as Tobias. Like, he's a more willing three-point shooter than Tobias. So is there any chance you could think of? Because I couldn't. Because I don't see a Ben and Zion fit in New Orleans.
Right. I was going to ask, is Ben being rerouted elsewhere in this scenario?
Okay. But, like, Brandon Ingram's 23, and, like, in this situation, Brandon Ingram is asking out because he's like, Zion's your guy. Like, I'm not your guy. And I want to go. And obviously he'd be getting traded to the Sixers where Embiid's the guy, but, like, we're contending now. Like, that's the idea behind it. So, like, I don't even know if this makes the team better, but I just see these big wings. He's 23. Like, if Ingram wants out, I couldn't think of a trade. But I just – maybe that's where the Bulls come in. But, like, are you really going to go to Zion and be like, hey, we got you some younger players again?
Right. And yeah, that's the – you know, I was thinking, like, all of the teams that will come up all the time, like Portland sending CJ there, I don't see how that – really meaningfully helps New Orleans. Like, Cleveland sending Sexton and Love, I mean, I guess no, I don't think you do that for Ingram. I mean, unless Philly's sending more back, but, like, I think, yeah, whatever the third team is, it's getting bent. Like, Cleveland would have to send more than that, but they're not giving up number three. So Minnesota, again, if they're not giving up Russell or Edwards,
yeah,
like, is the Malik Beasley, Ricky Rubio? At least you don't have to watch Eric Bledsoe. Maybe that could be the silver lining.
No. What New Orleans needs is another point guard who has a questionable shot. So they should.
maybe if you can use this trade to get off of Eric Bledsoe, that reduces the asking price for Brandon Ingram. But
that was a thought that I had. But I'm still like, oh God, I think Brandon Ingram has 4 years left on his deal. He's 23. He's a scorer. Like, I personally think Zion, even though they don't win nearly as much because they're even younger than Ben and Embiid were a few years ago. But it's a situation kind of similar to them where like they can't, everyone's like, they can't work. And I'm like, well, yeah, if you make Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe in the starting lineup with them, they're not going to work. But like if you put shooters and like Nickeil Alexander-Walker gets better and like you re-sign Lonzo and Josh Hart and like figure out all that stuff, like I think that that could be workable. I don't know if it's going to be good in the playoffs, but I do know that in the regular season, I think that that is definitely at least workable. I think that's more of a long shot, but I had to throw it out there.
Yeah.
Which is funny because like all these years, it was always the battle between who's better between Ingram and Simmons.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think it's pretty obvious that Ingram has at least almost caught up to Ben, if not better than Ben, just because the fact that like it's so important to have good offense in today's NBA.
Right. Yeah, if nothing else, he's like got higher upside in the playoffs for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So and by the way, all the people that yelled at me about that on Twitter, like, come on, dude, grow up. all right. So all reports indicate that OKC is being patient with their rebuild. I don't think there's any truth to the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander stuff.
No way.
I think it's total bullshit. I think that you would be insane to trade away a 22-year-old player that's as good as he is already. If he doesn't line up with your rebuild is wrong. And yeah. you should, unless you're getting Cade Cunningham, unless you're getting the first pick in the draft this year or a top three pick in this draft, and you're like, fuck it, we're just going to, you know, we're going to speed or we're going to set back another year and try to get some like really elite top end talent. I don't see that happening. But if there ever was an SGA trade that was out there, the Sixers would have pretty good ammunition, I would say.
Yeah.
And I think that they would be willing to give up a lot, and they'd have to get other teams involved, obviously, because Ben would have no value to OKC.
Right.
Obviously, the OKC thing, the Ben Simmons, like, Shai and Ben are friends, I think. I remember them talking before a game once, and, like, he always says what up to him at games and shit. So I think that if they were to want to speed up their rebuild, that could be a landing spot. But, like, once again, the assets you're getting back would just be picks. Or, we don't want Kemba Walker.
No.
So it doesn't make any sense. And everyone who said, like, oh, well, like, there are people out there that are like, oh, the Sixers are going to trade Ben and just take back Kemba once he has, or Tobias. And I'm like, I don't want Kemba. I don't want a player who has the injury concerns that he does and the playoff limitations, once again.
Right.
So, All right. So, and then the last one is, like, if the Pistons didn't get the first pick, I could see them making a trade for Ben Simmons. Like, I could see a situation where they're just like maybe they got like the sixth pick in this draft instead of the first pick. And then I could just be like, oh, okay. Well, like Troy Weaver is just like such an out of the box GM, like does not seem to follow what everyone else thinks. But now that they're getting Cade, I just can't see a situation where it's like, oh, we got Cade. Let's get Ben Simmons to pair with him.
Right. Well, unless they don't take Cade. I mean, there are, you know, some rumors out there that they're like really high on Jalen Green.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are bullshit. I don't think it's bullshit that they're high on Jalen Green. I think a lot of teams are. He's really fucking good. But I think that they're going to eventually end up just taking Cade.
Or if you're really that high, if you're like so torn and you think these guys are on the same level, just trade down to number two, because Houston would be insane not to give up a ton of value to go up to number one and get Cade. Or if they trade up for Jalen Green, then you get Cade Cunningham at two and you got some extra stuff as well. So like, yeah, whichever team has the number one pick on draft night better damn well take Cade Cunningham. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. And it always comes down to, it's the thing that, and I know obviously this doesn't look quite as much of a gap as it did a few years ago, but like, it's the Luka thing. Like,
yeah.
Zach Lowe said it on his podcast, like, you'll never get fired for taking Luka number one. Like, you just won't.
Right.
And like, it's the Cade is in the same situation. Like, if Cade sucks, something crazy happens, some Markelle Fultz situation happens to him, you're not going to get fired for that.
Like,
it was the right decision at the time. And if you go against that and then Cade goes two to Houston and Cade is a Hall of Famer and the guy you drafted is really good, but he's just like an all-star or even like below that, like you're done. So we've seen those mistakes be made one too many times. I didn't say the Knicks in here, but I would imagine the Knicks would have some interest if they decided like they wanted to move on from Julius Randle. They just don't have anyone that I want. So
yeah.
I don't, and unless there's a third team that wants RJ Barrett or Julius Randle. Once again, don't really see a trade there. And then the last thing I just want to touch on here, like total last thought, the thing that Morey values in trades, like ranked, number one is stars, superstars, obviously. Like, I think that if there is a superstar out there, he will do everything in his power to get that player, unless they play for the Houston Rockets. and then the second thing that he values is high-level role players. So Shane Battier, Robert Covington, even Seth Curry, Danny Green that he's got since he got here. Players on good contracts who aren't about to expire or who are willing to re-sign. So same thing, he said that he will overpay. So those are kind of the guys that you have to think of when you're thinking of these trades. And then guys with upside who can contribute now, kind of like Harden was when he traded for him. And I think that Sexton and Ingram kind of fall into that category. Also, another guy out there that I don't think that they would trade for that would probably not be available that would fall into that category would be D'Anthony Melton from the Memphis Grizzlies. But I just don't see them moving on from him. And Morey actually drafted him, but he traded him on draft night. And then five is just veterans. Like, I think that right now he's going to be targeting veterans. He's going to be targeting win now guys. And I think those are the things to look out for. If you were a betting man, I'm not. I said 90-10 earlier, Ben's on the team next year, and I'll say 70 or isn't on the team. I'm sorry, 90-10. I'll say 60-40 for Tobias Harris. I'm leaning towards him not being here, but if he is, I'm fine with it, whatever. Where would you say your odds are at for both of those guys?
Man, I think just because of like how long we just spoke, and it's like hard to find a good framework Ben Simmons deal. Yeah. Like, I think it's probably closer to 50-50, honestly. Like, I do think there's a real chance that they, you know, you said it, like Morey wants a star in return. And if he's sitting there thinking Dame, Beal, and LaVine could all potentially, I'm not saying all of them will, but all of them could become available in the next 12 months, are we really going to blow the Ben Simmons chip on something less than that? Now, I'm not saying you're getting any of those guys just for Ben Simmons straight up. You are not. You're going to have to include other stuff, picks, maxi, whatever. But, you know, given the chance that Ben improves this offseason, that he makes everyone forget about that Atlanta series next year, I agree. There's a chance that it carries over and, you know, he doesn't improve at all and Philly fans boo the hell out of him every time he touches the ball. But, like, he's still going to have value regardless. So, yeah, I think probably 50-50 for Ben. And then Tobias, I'd say like probably 80-20 or 90-10 that he's still on the team.
Okay. You think you just don't think that because of the contract, you don't think that like, or you just think that like they'll want to keep him. Like, I'm not anti-Tobias. Like, I'm fine with him. Like, I know that he's had his struggles at times in the playoffs, but I think a lot of that is contextual. I think that in the right situation, if we built the right roster around him and Embiid, we could kind of figure that situation out if we actually had a lead guard. I don't know. I think that Morey might see this as his opportunity to get off the contract and that in the next 3 or 4 years that he could, because Embiid's going to get that supermax probably. And if you trade for a guy like Dame, he's already on a supermax. Or if you trade for a guy that you really want, like, they're going to be basically taking up your entire cap.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this could be the sell high window for Tobias because he's just coming off the career year and was pretty, like, mostly good during the playoffs. He had a couple bad games, especially late in the Atlanta series.
Yeah, no, I think so, too. Also, Tobias, you can have him be your first quarter guy, your third quarter guy, and, like, you just need a closer. And, like, the thing that I always come back to with, like, trying to make the Ben thing work is, like, now you have a fundamental issue with Ben in the playoffs that we've now seen three times. And on top of that, to get that lead initiator, you're not going to be able to keep Ben. So, like, everyone that's out there, like, even if you traded Tobias and Maxey and all your picks and all that stuff, that's not getting you back Dame Lillard or Bradley Beal or someone who is, like, a legitimate lead initiator. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm just like, sorry, Ben, people, like, this is probably over.
Yeah. Like, right.
Like, that's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, especially if you ask me what the odds are that he starts the season on the Sixers, 50-50, that he ends the season on the Sixers, there I'm at like 80-20, 90-10.
Gotcha. That makes sense. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Brian. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
People can follow. I, by the way, love the name of your podcast, the NBA podcast. I can't believe that that was not.
We're the only one. It's so weird. Such a heavily covered league and only one NBA podcast.
And you guys have been posting some great stuff to YouTube. That's actually where I watched this on your YouTube channel. So definitely check that out. I'll link everything in the description. And thanks once again for coming on.
Cool. Thanks for having me, man. Anytime. Happy to, when this saga is over, I will be happily to discuss it further.
Let's do it. Hey, peace.